The Southwest WA Drought Resilience Adoption and Innovation Hub acknowledges the traditional custodians throughout Western Australia and their continuing connection to the land, waters and community. It pays its respects to elders past and present and extends that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Hello, I'm Julianne Hill, Hub Adoption Manager. This podcast series on dry season responses is brought to you by the Southwest WA Drought Hub and funded through Future Drought Fund. In this series, we'll hear from growers and industry experts on managing dry season responses, ranging from early planning to tactical decision making as the season changes throughout the year and setting up for your following season.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Dry Seasons Resources podcast. In this particular episode, we're dealing with the younger demographic of farmers, the older, I don't know, millennials as we like to call ourselves. And this episode is all about upskilling young farmers in financial literacy, particularly when recovering from a poor season and setting up for another year. I am joined by Renee Piggott from Ag Asset. She is a farm management consultant, and also Matt Hyde, who is a young farmer out in Dalwallinu. I'm going to get you guys to start off by introducing yourselves. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Renee, and what it is you do with Ag Asset?
Yeah, so I'm Renee Piggott. I'm from Bindoon, and I work as a farm management consultant in the eastern and northern wheatbelt of WA. So pretty much my role as a farm management consultant is to help people out with their strategic planning, their budgeting, land purchases and things like that. I've been working in this space for maybe 3 years now. I've come across from an animal science space, so finance wasn't my first language, I guess. But, yep, now we're here and learning a lot about it.
How did you go from the livestock space to the finance space?
It's really interesting. I actually finished off in the animal health space and then I felt like I wanted to broaden my horizon into my degree. So I did a business small unit at University of New England and I was horrible at it. So I actually touched base.
That's just what all your clients want to hear.
Any clients listening. But then I reached out to my farm consultant and he sat down with me and helped me do my assignments. And then I really got it once someone sat down and kind of explained it in layman's terms. And then he helped me finish the unit, finished with high distinctions. So don't worry, everyone else that was worried. And then, yeah, I kind of worked in animal health space and he invited me to come back to WA and start working as a farm consultant, which I didn't really think was possible. But now 3 years into it, it's, yeah, got a handle on it.
That's really interesting, Renee. Matt, how about yourself? You farm in Dalwallinu. Can you tell us a little bit about the farming operation that you're from and what you do?
Yeah, spot on, Shannon. So, yeah, I'm a fifth-generation farmer based in Dalwallinu. And, yeah, we just grow kind of your typical wheat, canola, kind of barley lupins rotation. And, yeah, just at the moment, we just started seeding. So we're just maybe a fifth of the way through our seeding program at the moment. And, yeah, looking forward to a good rain that's hopefully going to come up on the horizon sometime soon.
Keep our fingers crossed for that one. Matt is currently sitting in his ute taking a break from his seeding program. So we're very grateful for him giving us a little bit of time in what is a very hectic period of the year. Renee, when it comes to young farmers and finances, do you find it's something that they know a lot about, that they don't? What's been your experience so far?
Oh, my experience is very varied. You have some that have gone through uni, I guess, or an agribusiness degree, and they've kind of got a pretty decent handle on it, or the ones that have been exposed from a younger age to their finances. But more commonly, I have ones that haven't. They've gone to Perth or something, they've done a trade, or they've never been part of the conversation. So they don't really have a strong grasp on their finances, I would say. I mean, Matt can probably tell me if I'm right or wrong and how he came into his finances, but yeah.
I was going to say, Matt, what do you think on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you say your financial literacy of the farm business is?
Yeah, I'd say definitely maybe a 5. I'm very fortunate. My father's and my mother are very progressive. And so like we have a farm management consultant on board and like the finance side of the farm's definitely something that we keep very forefront of mind. I think it's very hard to run a successful business nowadays with cost pressures and the like without keeping that at the front of mind. But I still think, yeah, I still look at those numbers and it still comes back to me thinking like I'm pretty sure I'm lacking some of the key knowledge here on like yeah, what levers to pull to help progress the farm forwards.
Renee, how do we bridge that gap? How do we help young farmers learn what they need to know to, I guess, like eventually really take over the family farm?
Yeah, well, that's really, and that's something that's on the forefront of my mind, because I'm thinking it is intimidating to go into finance. And unless someone either sits down with you and looks at yours or does some really pointed kind of workshops, you're not going to know necessarily, because you can listen to podcasts and things, which are really good, but they give you a very broad understanding of it. When it gets down to the real nitty gritty of numbers, I think, well, I'm hopeful that I'm going to start doing a workshop or something to upskill people in this spot, because it is quite complex and it can go astray pretty quick. And yeah, you just need something that's more pointed to your education and your learning and what the bones and benefits are, not everything. Because if you try to learn everything, you'll probably end up thinking it's too hard and leave it for a rainy day.
Podcasts are great though, guys. Definitely still listen to this. You're still going to learn a lot, we promise. They're still a very valuable resource. Matt, what do you think you're lacking? What is the thing that you wish you knew more about that you can recognize that you probably don't?
I think for me, it's really kind of like what levers you can pull. Like, I think like every year you can kind of spit out these like benchmark numbers, and yeah, you can benchmark yourself against other businesses and say, hey, this is how I'm going. But I think it's a very different thing to know where you sit in the playing field to, okay, cool, this is where I am. How do I actually change like my farming operation so that I can move up and like improve where I am?
Yeah, that makes sense. So Renee, as part of this, there's, I guess, four ratios that underpin what we call business health. What are those ratios?
Yeah, so these, I guess this refers to like what Matt was talking about, the levers to pull. So first you've got to know what your levers are, which is understanding the data, but you're looking at your equity and your security ratio, which is pretty much how much debt you have to your farm value. And that will tell you your kind of equity position. And then you'll be looking at your debt to income and a kind of year in, year out analysis to see if your cash flow position is. So they're your four ratios that are quite important. And that will let you know, like what we've seen, and I see a lot of clients in this, and Matt might be able to kind of nod his head in agreement, but people now, because of land values and where they are, people are sitting in really good equity positions. But coming off the back of last year, the cash flow is the limiting factor in most people's farm books at the moment. So it's kind of knowing that, and then it's like knowing that once you've figured out, you know, okay, so I have great equity, cash flow is going to be my issue. Then it's like, okay, what can I do in the cash flow realm? So that's like, you know, utilizing CBH prepay, utilizing a RIC loan if you need, or deferring payments until harvest terms so you can get that cash flow. But you can't know those things unless you know your ratios to start with and where you sit.
Is that your experience, Matt? Would you agree with that, just in terms of the current situation, that equity is good and it's the cash flow that's not?
Yeah, 100% coming off a poor year, you find yourself with your pockets looking a little bit bare. And so I think that's exactly it. And that's why it's important to make sure you're on top of your finances so that, yeah, you're aware of where you are and your cash position. And yeah, if whether you might have a shortfall throughout the season and yeah, have to utilize some of those other financing methods.
I want to go into a little bit more detail, Renee, on what each of these ratios or levers are. So starting with the first one, which is the equity side of things, what does that involve, and is there more to it than just, you know, the land that you own? Are there other things that can go into equity, and are there any levers that can be pulled in that side of things?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Every time you pull one lever, it's like they've got little other ones down the bottom that you can kind of manipulate to make it look a lot better. So when it comes to equity, that's your whole statement of position. So that takes your machinery in your shed, which is pretty poignant these years, your land, your cash at bank, produce on hand, grain pool equity, kind of all come into your assets that you have. And then you take your liabilities, which is your debt, your HP commitments for your machinery, you know, your tax withstanding, all those sorts of things, that comes into your equity position. Where your security ratio, that is only just your peak debt through the year versus your land value, which what's like, it's like saying like the bank has the mortgage and they take the mortgage over the land. So whatever they've got mortgaged versus your debt is what your security ratio will be in the eyes of the bank. And it's really just making them feel like, okay, say cash flow wasn't an issue and they lost all their money, can we get our money back? Is really what the equity is looking at. How much can we get back? And are we comfortable that we can get it back if things go to absolute shit?
So from the security ratio point of view then, how important is that number and how do people get to that number? Is that an easy number to find?
Yeah. I mean, you can do it in your head or on a computer or a calculator, sorry. It's pretty much your land value, what it's worth. It's also important to note it's what it's worth to the banks, not necessarily in the eyes of the beholder, because that can be a bit of a difference. And then your peak debt or your overdraft facilities, and you just pretty much go your peak debt divided by land value will give you something times by 100. And from that, we like to see that under 50%, because that allows you, if you have another poor year, that you can draw down on your land value to use some of your equity into your cash flow. And I hope I haven't lost anyone.
Look, I didn't do maths in school past year 10, so it's been a hot minute. But I feel like I'm keeping up, so if I'm doing all right, hopefully everyone else is as well. Matt, is that a number that you know for your farm? Do you know what that security ratio number is on the in the operation?
No, I don't think we look at that necessarily. We definitely keep a good eye on equity, and then obviously, like, when you're trying to expand, like, ability to pay your debt is also kind of a key metric that we're looking at. Yeah, if you can't generate enough cash flow to obviously to pay off the interest that you might take on for taking on more land, then, yeah, it doesn't matter how good your equity is, you won't be able to kind of service your debt.
Yeah, which is very common now and only getting more common as the interest rate is going higher. It's harder to repay debt or buy land at a price that you can actually make enough money off to make it, I guess, you look at your return on assets like you would any other investment. That's really skewed when the land price is so high. You're not getting your yields off it and you've got that interest rate. It's better off to lease, but that's not always. It's a different climate at the moment.
That was going to be one of my questions, that if, you know, the main thing in this equity piece is the land, but you've got to pay interest on that land or pay to lease it, and we've had a poor season, so the land's not doing as great. How does that puzzle piece come together?
Well, that's really looking at, like Matt said, your equity and your ability to service debt through your debt to income or your year in, year out analysis. That really comes back to there. So if you know what those ratios are, say it's all at 100%, then you could take a piece of land. Maybe we say about 25% of your land you have now is a safe expansion, rough and ready figures. So kind of taking that into note and doing that, then it will work. But if you've had a bad year and then you're coming into maybe this year, you're dry seeding and you're looking at buying land, you've really got to look at those ratios and say, okay, this is what it is. What if this year is similar to last? Are you comfortable with that risk you're taking on? Because if not, then if you can't sleep at night, then don't do it. If you can, then that's okay. And it comes down to how you feel about risk and how you feel about the debt you're going to take on. So it's really just stress testing it. And I think this has been said before, and a lot of people will reiterate what I'm saying now, is you look at it, you do your farm analysis, you do your cash flows going forward, and you stress test it. Is it going to be a bad year? What happens? If it's a good year, what happens? Just so you know all the different outcomes that could happen by taking on that land. And if it's all good or you're feeling comfortable with it, go for it. But if you don't even do those numbers and shake a hand, you might want to think about it nowadays, because you'll probably be worse off.
I like that you've brought like that risk appetite into it, because it's all very good and well to do these numbers, but different people are going to have things that they're comfortable with and things that they're not, even though the numbers could look exactly the same. One farmer would be willing to do it and another farmer wouldn't. Matt, what would you say your family and your risk appetite is like?
Obviously, you're having a new generation like coming onto the farm. We're probably a little bit more bullish than some other farmers might be, I think. Again, it comes back to, as Renee said, your risk appetite and also like what stage of your life you're in. Like, I know definitely before I came home, yeah, my dad was and my mum were definitely a bit more relaxed about, or a bit more conservative, how much risk they'd take on, because obviously why would they want to risk everything that they'd grown over their lifetime? And obviously with like some, yeah, renewed enthusiasm into the business, yeah, we're looking kind of looking forwards and looking to where we can take the business.
Now, Matt, Renee dubbed you in offline and let me know that you're actually doing a grain growers project at the moment looking at risk. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I feel like it ties in nicely.
Yeah, look, nothing's safe around here. But no, I am, I was fortunate to get selected as one of 10 grain growers young leaders. Yeah, I'm doing a project that's focused on risk, kind of people's attitudes towards risk and kind of how that influences their decision making. And yeah, I don't know, for me, it's quite an interesting topic, especially coming off the back of 22 and 23, where they were just such wildly different years. It really showcased how different attitudes to risk led to actually quite different outcomes. Like in 22, people that were more bullish obviously reaped the rewards, but then conversely in 23, the people that were more bullish also felt a lot more pain. Yeah, so just kind of focusing in on that. And really, obviously, I don't have a lot of experience in the industry. I'm kind of new to the industry. So I'm just keen to hear how people in the industry deal with the kind of risks that we face.
Now, Renee, I've done a quick little bit of research just then, just a quick Google. Turns out you are also one of the grain growers' young leaders. So you threw Matt in the deep end, and now I'm going to throw you in as well. So what is it that you're focusing on as part of this project?
Yeah, so as part of my grain growers' leadership project, mine is in, to no surprise, financial literacy in young farmers and developing the framework of a workshop that can help engage young farmers and help educate them into their four key ratios. So, yeah, very fitting for what my job is and very fitting off the back of last year, because most of the places I went out, we saw a lot of poor results as a compounding effect from having the two good years and then this year being such a harsh finish. So I think it's a perfect time to start doing something like this. But yeah, so my project is looking at that and looking at how I can educate people and make it, I guess, a fun learning experience so they don't hear your four key ratios and go to sleep on me.
It's good. Trying to make finance like sexy is not the easiest of tasks. So good luck to you. I want to go into some more of these levers though, and in terms of the cash flow side of things. We did have a pretty poor 2023, more or less across the board in WA. So what are the levers that people can pull heading into the 2024 season to try and, I guess, balance things out or even things out and just, you know, set themselves up for a better year?
Yeah, well, it depends what position the business is in. But most people, the levers that they can pull is utilising some of their equity that they have on their land value and bringing it into cash flow, which means, you know, extending your overdraft limits so that people can go through another year, deferring payments until the end of the year, these sorts of things. It's also keeping a really good eye on your costs and your variable costs versus the yield you're expecting. So when you're kind of coming into a season and you don't know what to expect, you go to your average yields and then you do your average pricing and your average costs. And if there's a discrepancy there, which a lot of budgets going forward don't look that flash, it's knowing that it doesn't look that flash and knowing when you can pull back and when you should go forward. And it's having, like, I guess it all comes back to seeding now. I'm having a lot of conversations because we're dry seeding about whether canola needs to go in the ground or not, especially out east, where if you don't get it up and out by the first week of May, it's, you know, you're starting to use yield there and it's a more expensive crop to put in the ground when your canola seed's about $55 a kilo. So it's kind of thinking preemptively about how it all plays as a big picture and whether that's worth it and whether your risk is worth it. Which, yeah, it'd be interesting to see, Matt, going into this year now, how you are taking it or how you're, are you doing anything different with your N? Are you doing anything different just to help cash flow or to, I guess, hedge your bets going into this season?
Yeah, I think definitely, I suppose it all started back like kind of pre-seeding, doesn't it? Exactly as you said, where obviously we've done like the cash flow budget for the year, kind of seeing what our position's looking like, how our peak debt's looking like. Exactly as you say, like we've done a few timing things to try manipulate obviously peak debt a little bit, try and minimise what our maximum overdraft size might be. And then now coming into seeding, I think probably at the moment, yeah, I think our budget fortunately looked okay for the year, like considering the input costs and what we're coming out of. So at the moment, we're kind of sticking with the plant. It also helps agronomically, like it's a complicated thing to balance, obviously, what's going to be best agronomically alongside what's going to be best for your business position, like from a one-year perspective. And so, yeah, at the minute, we haven't really changed too much of our seeding program just because if we take canola out and put cereal in, it kind of just compounds because next year will have to be canola. And yeah, so at the moment, we're just kind of sticking with our seeding plan. But of course, always keeping a close eye on like our cash position and whether we, nitrogen might have to pull back if it stays dry and the year's not so great.
Yeah, which I think is really important also to note that what I've seen amongst really good farmers is the fact that they're already thinking about what they might do, like the what ifs. So the fact that Matt has like the triggers of knowing if it's not going to rain, then I'm not going to put that nitrogen out, and he's not backdoor thinking, oh, but what if it's a really good year and then I might put a whole heap out? He's thinking, no, if it doesn't rain by this, maybe X, Y, and Z, then I'm not going to do that. And it's kind of helps with your peace of mind, but it also helps when it comes to like the biggest winners I saw last year were the conservative guys, which conversely the year before wasn't the issue. So it's knowing when stuff happens, that means that I need to pull back or it means go forth. There's this really good tool. It's called the rainfall to date tool, because I don't have the experience of a 30-year farming. Kind of you can put your rainfall in and it tells you what decile your rainfall you're tracking versus yield that you might get. So I find this is to be a really helpful tool to kind of get a gauge of, okay, right now we haven't had rain here. What does it look like at the end of the year? It's hard to do at this point, definitely. Probably something you more use around June to know if you're going to put that extra N on. But different tools you can use to inform your decisions instead of just going straightforward decision usually helps.
I like the idea of having, I guess, those like trigger points during the year of if this happens, I do this. Like it's not a question, as you say, it's like it's not so much of a what if, it's just if this scenario occurs, I do this. If that occurs, I do this instead. And you just kind of have like almost a bit of a plan laid out throughout the year. Obviously, there's always a chance that it's going to go to hell because that's just farming and you can have the best of plans set up and it'll absolutely screw with you. But at least having some form of game plan, I guess, Matt, does that help with you just having a bit of peace of mind throughout the year that you know theoretically what the plan, the game plan is?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it comes back to what Renee was saying. It's about having the plan and the information at hand, like you've already done kind of the homework. So when you're busy in the season, you don't have to have that kind of mental load. You've already kind of made the decision. Okay, here's where we are. This hasn't happened or has happened. This is where we're going to go. Yeah, it certainly helps when you're busy instead of having to, yeah, you're halfway through the season. You're like, oh, I don't have the cash to do what I want to do. I haven't had the rain to do what I want to do. Or conversely, I have had the rain. Yeah, it certainly takes a lot of pressure off.
It's almost that like planning for best case and worst case scenario. That way, no matter what happens, you're prepared for each situation. Renee, what do people do if, and I don't want to put this out into the world, but it needs to be said, if things don't change, if like it's been a dry year, we've barely had any rain, if it continues on like this for the rest of the season, what levers can people continue to pull if we keep not getting rain?
Yeah, well, this is kind of a good thing that I'm going to bring up now is that I guess when it comes to a dry year, the levers you can pull are minimal. So you can't really spend that much because you don't have that much to spend and you can't really put much in the ground. So what I think is actually a more useful conversation is what can you do in a good year that helps you for a bad year? So that means when it goes back to those really good years we had, were you buying all the latest machinery or were you consolidating your debt position? The best farm decisions you can make for drought are in your best years. So, yeah, so it really just depends what position you're in now, because by this point, there's not a whole hell of a lot apart from doing RIC loans, deferring your income, deferring your expenses, sorry, utilising CBH cash flow and utilising your equity that you'd have gained from your land position in this year to get you through this year and next. And it's kind of knowing that you don't need to buy all the things or you don't do as much deep ripping or those sorts of things because you can't. But the banks will probably tell you that you can't, or your bottom line will tell you that you can't do that in a dry year. So it's how you set your business up in the better years.
So unfortunately, if you didn't do that, probably not the news you wanted to hear. But Matt, I feel like your family probably, well, you and your family probably did do the right thing and do the good thing when you were having a good year, because you seem like those type of people. So can you tell us what it is that you guys did during, you know, when you were having a good year in, you know, 21, 22, and how you kind of used those good years to set yourselves up for the future?
I certainly wouldn't make us out to be a lot better than we are. Yeah, we're definitely in the good years. Trying to pay down debt is obviously a key focus. And that's also if we want to expand, you know, you got to clear some debt off your books because you're going to want to take more on for some more land. I think it was quite challenging, to be fair, in the past couple of years because it was really high cost years, and especially machinery costs increased a lot. So people also having to make a lot more room on their like balance sheets for a lot more value of machinery. So, yeah, it certainly hasn't been an easy – it's not a black and white decision, all of these decisions. It's something that obviously it's case-by-case scenario. Yeah, we've kind of been trying to pay down debt, been trying to obviously turn over some machinery, we had cash available. But I think, as Renee said, it's like it's a multi-year thing. You can't just be looking at 1 year in isolation. You've got to be planning for multiple years. And we know in WA we're going to get good years and we're going to get poor years. And so hopefully after a couple of poor years we'll have a couple of good years and the average will work out in our favour.
I think that's a good point what Matt said, though, about coming off the last two good years. We had that real temptation of the instant asset write-off and that really sat there. And now we're seeing, I guess, coming into some good years, some poorer years, you still have those high machinery loan repayments because you did it to save tax because you obviously had a very high taxable income from the two good years, but now you're carrying over on a higher thing. So I think that comes back to we also have these variable cost ratios and fixed cost ratios that might be something to talk about now that you like to see. You don't spend any more than 10% of your income on machinery purchases in 1 year or in an average year is kind of what we benchmark it at. And we saw that get out of whack the last 2 years because of these incentives by the government. So it's just now bringing it back and being you're spending more in line with the income of an average year rather than a higher year. Does that make sense? I think I butchered that.
I think that makes sense. I also just love that you have actual numbers because I feel like so often it's like, oh, you know, don't spend too much, but what's too much is, you know, it's so variable. Yeah. So I really like this, just like 10%. Just like give everyone a figure, say this is the number, like stick within your means pretty much. And obviously 10% is going to be different for every farmer and every operation, but I love that there's actually just solid numbers that you're able to give. And obviously there's still a guide, but it's nice to have a number.
Yeah, it is. And it is like, yeah.
It'd be interesting to know, Renee.
Yeah.
Have many of your numbers been changing in like kind of recent years with obviously a lot more uncertainty around obviously prices we might receive for grain, but also there's been a lot of inflation on the cost that we're paying for a lot of the inputs that we're using for farming?
Yeah, so that's we do variable cost ratio, which is usually around 50% to 60% of your income goes straight to variable costs, which is a profitable level. We're seeing it really creep up in the last few years to more around the 70 to 80% of your income goes straight to variable costs. So that leaves you with only 20% for your fixed costs and your profit, which really doesn't leave a hell of a lot. But there's also not much you can do about that when your chemicals are expensive and your fertilizer has been double the price, which is something to be mindful of. And in farming, you never look at 1 year because you're going to see such a weird picture. You like to look at a five-year average. So if your five-year average is under 60, then you're probably not too bad. But if you're edging up, and I mean even 70, I'm starting to feel more comfortable with, but if it's above that 70% of your income is going straight out to variable costs, you probably need to look into it and just make sure that you're using the right fertilizer and chemical rotations for the yield you're achieving. Is something you might want to look at.
That was a great question, Matt. I'm just going to excuse myself from the room and let you guys chit-chat between yourselves. That was great. But no, it is hard when you've had a year, as we said, like there was a period there where, you know, like urea was double the price that it ever had been before. So it's all very good and well to say, yeah, you know, only spend 50 to 60% on these variable costs. But when the price is doubled, what are you going to do? But then, yeah, if you average it out over 5 years and you're still below that level, it's okay. Renee, you said you're getting more comfortable with 70%. Is that just because that's the way things seem to be trending at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I probably shouldn't have said comfortable. I'm seeing it a lot more, so it's more common that it's higher. And, yeah, it does seem because you look, the fertiliser, that's starting to creep back a little bit more, not necessarily your compound, but your urea, your UAN is coming back. And your chemical, I mean, this year with the Secura coming off patent and things like that, you think you're going to see a bit of reprieve in the chemical space. But what's shocking me is the repairs and maintenance are creeping up. You know, guys are running a lot of newer gear, but they still have to get them repaired. And when you do it, it's not as simple as your old gear where you can do it yourself. You usually have to get a technician out, and they're quite dear to get a technician out and to do all the electrical work in the new gear. So you're seeing that you still spend the same or more on repairs and maintenance while still having higher machinery repayments, which is a bit of a double knock to the system. I'm not sure if that how Matt feels about that, but I've just seen that a lot this year, especially coming off review season.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely something we're seeing. And I think that's really where I think having a good understanding of your financials and knowing what levers can pull is really helpful because obviously, yeah, you can see your R&M is creeping up and maybe all of a sudden you might decide that maybe it's actually cheaper to put your own mechanic on than get AFGRI in to do a job. Yeah, I think that's a good example where you can actually like make changes on to the structure or like how you operate your farm to kind of hopefully try and adjust some of these costs.
that's a really important point. Like, once you know these costs and you know they're there and you know they might be outliers, it makes it so much easier to go and investigate that part of your farm to see the problem. But when you just are losing money and you don't necessarily know where, it makes it really difficult. So knowing your numbers is quite important. And although it's not as fun as, I guess, going out and deep ripping or seeding or doing something like that, it's really important to know so that you can see what you're doing in the paddock and how it relates to your books.
I feel like we've just come full circle there, and I'm just going to pretend that I'm a wonderful podcast host who did that on purpose, bringing us back to, you know, making sure we know those numbers. But you guys did that all by yourselves. Look at that. Matt, I want to ask, if there was one thing that you would want other young farmers to know about just knowing their finances, what would you, tell other young farmers?
I don't know, it's just about like making a start. It's going to be like anything, isn't it? Like, you just need to start working, like getting a budget, or like if you've got no financial information for your farm, just like start making a budget and just start getting involved in that process so you're new into it and that's something that your parents have always done. Because, yeah, obviously if you never make a start, you're never going to build those skills and that knowledge and understanding of the area. And the longer you leave it, the obviously busier you get with operational side of things and the less time you have to spend doing that side of things anyway. So, yeah, I think like anything, it's just, making a start and start the learning process.
Can I ask a question, Matt? When you started that learning process, was it before you decided you were fully coming back to the farm, or was it once you kind of took the plunge and came back to the farm?
I suppose a bit of both. Like, I was fortunate, like at school I did economics, so obviously that kind of gives you a bit of a broad overview of like financials. And I also at university studied agribusiness. So again, we touched on it, but I feel it's a very different thing to know like kind of the theory. Like, cool, I've got to know the formula for like these ratios, but it's a very different thing to actually apply it on the farm and use it.
And then how about yourself, Renee? You're creating, hopefully, this workshop for young farmers. So it's obviously a topic that you're pretty passionate about. But what would you want those young farmers to know about, I guess, just getting started with learning about the finances on the farm? Is there a particular question that they should be asking their parents or anything like that just to help them get started?
I think just being there and being present, asking questions. Like, I remember when I started, I was very nervous to ask any questions around finance because I thought I'd sound really silly. So it's definitely just ask any questions that you have, and then maybe in your business, try and identify those four key ratios and then benchmark them against and say, okay, with my four key ratios I've got, am I in a good position? Am I not? And then that will answer a lot of questions. And even talking about that with your parents or your bank or your financial advisor, they should be able to help you and understand. And it's their job. Like, you got to remember at the end of the day, you're paying those people to help you in your business. So their job, they should help you understand them.
Matt, is there anything that you would like to know from Renee? You've got a great source sitting in front of you at the moment. If you had one question to ask the financial expert about the farm for this year, what is it?
I don't know. Does she know much about how to make it rain? Because that'd be that'd be a really helpful one.
Yeah.
But no, I think, one question for this year. I think a helpful bit about the advisor is definitely just about, what she's seen around the landscape and, anything that other farms might be doing that, we haven't covered on already to, be helping them through after a tough year last year.
So what we've kind of going in, so most of my clients have been in the eastern northern wheat belt, so they've coming off a not so hot year last year and coming into this year. Our real plan is just kind of putting in your bare bones up front for seeding, so your lower end. So you're lowering your risk really by doing that. So it's what can I do that will put the crop in the ground this year and make it produce something that's really good, but I'm not going and throwing the whole kitchen sink at it. So you're putting back, in some areas only 30 to 40 units of N up front at seeding. You're not doing as much liming, you're not doing as much deep ripping, but you're still keeping up, your agronomics there. You can't just let that fall by the wayside, but you're not going as hard as you would have the last 2 years. And then you're looking at where you can come back a little bit in your costs so that as soon as you're coming back in your costs, you got to think you're making more room for profit. So really we're looking at the businesses this year and saying what sets us up to be happy with our risk, but also with our costs, what control we have. Because at the end of the day, like Matt said, you can't make it rain and you can't really do much on the grain marketing points. So your only control that you have on a farm is really your costs, which is shit. But it is what it is. So that's where you've got the most control for profit.
Thoughts on that, Matt?
Yeah, awesome. No, definitely a few great tips, and definitely a few things we'll be trying to employ on our farm this year to hopefully make sure it's a successful season.
Renee, Matt, thank you both so much for joining me on the podcast today and chatting with everyone about finances. Hopefully we've made it just a little bit fun for everyone, and young farmers, please get out there and learn a little bit.
Yeah, well, just on that, I've actually had Madfig have signed up to a few of my workshops already, so I'll be hosting one in June out in Meriden. So if anyone finds themselves looking for a place to go to learn about finance, keep your eyes out.
We'll include some details about that event in the show notes of the podcast as well. So if you want to learn more and go and learn from Renee in person, check the show notes, find out some more details. And if you're looking for any more information and resources on just responding to a dry season, make sure you've subscribed to the monthly Hub newsletter. You can find that on the website at hub.gga.org.au under Hub News. Thanks again for joining me, Renee and Matt.
Awesome. Thanks, Shannon.
You've just been listening to the Southwest WA Hub's Limited Dry Season podcast series. For further support for decision-making through dry periods, the Drought Hub website features a collection of resources for the livestock, grains and horticultural industries. You can find them under the Resources tab on the Hub website at hub.gga.org.au.
This episode has been brought to you by the Southwest WA Drought Hub, funded by the Future Drought Fund. If you or someone you know is in crisis, contact Lifeline on 131114.